I knew I was going to have to introduce him. So I was talking with him, hoping to learn a little bit about him that I might share with you in my introduction. But you know how these things go when you get a couple of Al-Anons together. You get to talking about everything. I didn't learn a great deal about his background. But I did learn something that I think's a whole lot more important. I like his program. I think you're going to like it, and I think in Al-Anon, that's what it's all about. So I'd like you to meet another one of those. Walter H. from Omaha.
Hi, my name is Walt. Good to see all of you. I'm a very grateful member of Al-Anon, and you're a beautiful crowd. One of the things I like about being up here, one of the few things, as a matter of fact, is looking out on such a beautiful crowd of people and seeing so many happy faces. And there's a lot of you out there, and this is real nice. You know, I've never felt like one of those. I don't know why, but I never have. I just felt like one of the group. And I'll share that with you a little while, sometime tonight. You know, for a while, this weekend, I wasn't real sure whether I was being supposed to be up here or not. Fact is, until I actually got on stage, I thought surely something would happen. You know, I might break a leg or something like this might happen to me. And we had Jack come on last night, and he was a substitute for somebody. And Marquette came on this morning, and she did a beautiful job, and she was a substitute for somebody. Jerry came on this afternoon and enjoyed listening to you this afternoon, Jerry, and he was a substitute for somebody. So I thought, surely somewhere there's a substitute for Walt. But you know, the time kept going by and nothing happened. Even that storm blew by. And so here I am. I guess I'm not supposed to be substituted for. Maybe three is all you're supposed to have at one time. But it is good to be here. I appreciate being invited. As a matter of fact, one of the things I have learned in this fellowship is that I need to share. And so I do appreciate being invited to share, and I know that the sharing does more for me than it does for you. And that's why I say yes when asked. So if you get anything out of it, that's all right with me. I don't mind. But I'm here for me. So take what you can, and that's all right too. You know, another thing that I learned some years back, I don't really know how long, is that if I was going to be comfortable at all, and I get comfortable as I go, if I'm going to get comfortable at all, I've got to turn this over to God. You know, it's got to be His show. So again, if you don't like what I say tonight, you can blame Him, not me. And you know, that's kind of nice too. I always have butterflies, and I found that that's fine. I used to think that I shouldn't have. And I found for me that that was just my ego speaking, and the sooner I can get it to God and away from me, the sooner the butterflies go. And these things are all helpful. I like to just kind of chat with you a few minutes. Sometimes you get to know me a little better that way than some of the things I might say to you as the evening goes along. You know, I've been in Al-Anon long enough to see an awful lot of people come into this fellowship and to know that it's truly a miracle fellowship. I have seen many, many miracles. I have a lot of very good AA friends, and I know there are many miracles in AA, but there are miracles in Al-Anon, and they are beautiful. I consider myself a miracle, as a matter of fact, and you'll probably sense that before the night's over. But I've seen people come into Al-Anon with all sorts of personalities. You know, some of us talk about the AA or the alcoholic personality and the Al-Anon personality, and I don't believe in that kind of stuff. And if you do, that's all right. I don't mind. But I don't. I've seen people come into Al-Anon who came in with such a chip on their shoulder that they were angry, so angry they could hardly speak. And sometimes when they would speak, they probably wish they kept their mouth shut. And maybe some of you fit into that category. And these people I have seen come in, and they've slowed down over time, and if they keep coming, you can see the miracle start. And I usually see it start in the face and in the tone of voice, and you can see the change take place. I've seen people on the other end of that spectrum come in not able to even open their mouth. They'll sit in a corner as far away as they can, and they're quiet. And I guess the longest I've ever seen that happen was a fellow that came into one of our groups, and I don't think he spoke for 9 months. But he kept coming. He was evidently getting something, and he would open up slowly, and he made a real change in his life, too. And I've seen people all the way in between. So Al-Anon will work. It's up to us. And I, for one, know that since it worked for this guy up here, it's bound to work for anyone that really wants it bad enough and hurts bad enough. And I had to hurt pretty bad before it really started to work in my life. But it does work. We're supposed to tell a little bit about what it was like and what happened and what it's like now. And that's really the only reason I'm here, is just to share with you a little bit. I have to go back a long time in my sharing in order for you to understand me. In fact, it was important for me to do that, for me to understand me. And after all, that's what's important. No, I had to understand Walt. When I was about 3 months old, I almost died. And my mother has told this story often, but it didn't really come across to me until 5 or 6 years ago on what it really meant in my life. I almost died of malnutrition, as a matter of fact. Now, I was a pre-depression baby. I know you don't believe that, but I really was. And we had plenty of food in the house and all this, but even at that age, I never did what normal babies do. You know, when you're hungry, you cry, and Walt never cried. He kept to himself, even at that age, he didn't let people know how he felt. So I started out very young, keeping my feelings to myself. And this is something that has plagued me all my life. And I've learned through Al-Anon that, you know, I want to share, and I've learned how to share through this fellowship, but I've also learned that I tend to be kind of a reserved person, and that's all right, too. Once I understood me, I was in good shape. But that's the way I started out, and I almost died at that early age. But as I go through my childhood, this is pretty much the way it was. I became, or was, pretty much of an introvert. I didn't even talk very well. My mother tells me the only time she really offered me a bribe was when I was, I guess, about 5 years old, and I was ready to go into the first grade, and I couldn't talk. I stuttered, and people couldn't understand me at all. And she promised me a bicycle if I would work with her all summer long and learn to speak intelligently, well, at least so I could be understood, before school started. And I guess I did, because I did start school, and I did have a lot of problems with speech when I was young. But it's all part of this being within myself and not being able to share. And I found it very difficult in school. I didn't like to get up in front of classes and do things like this, which is part of what you're supposed to do. So I had a lot of these problems. When I got into junior high school, I was afraid, I was scared to death of you ladies. You just scared me. You're real bad, you know. You don't do that anymore. That's growth, you know. That's nice. In fact, as Bob and I talked a little bit about that yesterday, even some advantages in growing old. You know, when I was young, I appreciated gals about my own age. But now I appreciate all of you, and that's great. That's really marvelous. But you know, another thing I found is that I was pretty much a late bloomer. And I was really well into high school before I matured. And I was enough afraid of you that I usually started dates, a few dates that I had in high school, with blind dates. And they usually were gotten either by my older brother, who was 2 years older than I, or my younger brother, who was 4 years younger than I. And he was, you know, he did more dating than I did. Once I dated a girl, I could ask her again. I had that much, you know, intestinal fortitude, if you will. But if I got turned down, unless there was a good reason that was acceptable to me, I didn't have enough, you know, fortitude to ask her again. So I didn't have an awful lot of dates through high school. I did start dating after I got into college and found that I was much more comfortable with gals that were younger than I. And I don't know why, but that's the way it was. So I had a lot of trouble with the fairer sex. We're not supposed to say that these days, are we? But I did. But that's all part of my pattern as I was growing up. I had trouble communicating how I felt with people. Now, the first breakthrough I had on this came when I was a senior in high school. We had I grew up in Columbus, Ohio, not that that makes any difference, but they have a YMCA and a pretty good YMCA program in Columbus. They have what they call a Gray Y. And I happened to be in High Y, and we had the boys director from the YMCA come out and talk to us one time. I guess it was in the spring or the winter. And he was looking for volunteers, high school seniors, to work with the Gray Y groups. And I don't know why, it kind of hit me. And I went up to talk with him, but I didn't have enough guts to talk to him myself. I got my older brother, who was still in high school, to come up and introduce me to the guy, and my older brother didn't know him either, but he came up and introduced me. It's just one of those other things. But the result of this was that I did start to work with the Gray Y boys, fourth, fifth, and sixth grades. And I found two things. I found that I really enjoyed them, and secondly, I found that they liked me. And this was something that was very important for me. It was one of the first times I was involved with other people who both liked me and I really liked. And I worked with youth of all ages, actually preschools, clear up through high school and into college at some times for the next 10 years, and found that I really enjoyed working with people. Now, through that time, I got to the point of being able to stand up in front of people and talk to them and, you know, this kind of thing. So I started to be able to relate and communicate to groups and to people in a general way. But I still find it very difficult to talk on a one-to-one or talk about me. I could talk about other things, but not about me. When I was about 20, I guess it was about 23, sounds about right, and I was working with a high school group. It was really a church group. I started to date one of the seniors in high school, and it wasn't until we'd been dating about 3 months that I found she was an early bloomer. Not only that, she was a real smart gal. She was only 15, but she was a senior in high school. Well, you know, we'd already been dating, and so what's 8 years? So we dated for a while, and she had a rather strict father. And about the time I was 24 or 25, my older brother got married. And about a year or so later, I'm sorry. My younger brother got married first? No, I can't remember that. One of them got married first. The next year, the other one got married. And, you know, I come from a family where marriage is what you're supposed to be doing. And so it seemed to me like I really ought to get married. And this young gal, you know, she was pretty much under her dad's thumb, and she felt that she needed to get out from under her dad's thumb. And so, you know, I did the same thing Jack did in his first marriage. It seemed like we were just made for each other. We had such good reasons for getting married. So we did get married, as a matter of fact. And I didn't feel I'd be a bachelor anymore. And I probably should have been a bachelor, at least at that stage. But we got married, and I think in many ways that marriage was doomed from the very beginning. Before we got married, when we would talk about something, we could talk real well, so long as we agreed. But as soon as we got to a topic where there was disagreement, I wouldn't talk about it anymore. That was one of the things that, you know, wasn't allowed to be talked about because we couldn't agree. And my whole personality said that I don't want to rock the boat. And so I couldn't take disagreements. I was a nice, smiley guy, and I agreed with everybody, and I tried to do what people wanted, and I found that got me a long way. People really liked me. You know, I'd try to please. I've heard a lot of Al-Anons as people pleasers. I know none of you out there are that or ever have been. But that's the way it was. And so when we got married, it wasn't long until we didn't have anything to talk about, you know? And we lost communication very early in that marriage, but it still resulted in two young ones, had a boy and a girl from that marriage. In 1958, something happened to me that I didn't think would ever be possible in my life. Something happened that just completely turned me over many, many times, as a matter of fact, at that time. I fell in love. I didn't think it would be possible for me to ever fall in love with a gal, but I did. Now, there's only one real problem, of course. I didn't fall in love with my wife. That was the first problem, and the second problem, the gal I fell in love with was already married to someone else. So there were two problems involved. A third one that made it kind of messy, her husband and I taught at the same school, and it happened to be a very small town. And the upshot of this was that we went ahead, and we had two divorces, and I got fired, and I got married, and Corinne and I started our life of alcoholism. Now, I have to go back and talk to you about alcoholism. Now, let me tell you one other thing, though, because we had children involved, and I am very comfortable in talking about the kids now. For a while, I wasn't. Corinne had two boys and two girls, and I had one boy and one girl. And we broke up two families. I think both marriages were on the rocks and had been for years. I don't think anything could have saved them. Both had tried counseling and nothing happened. But still in all, the end result was two broken families and six kids that had to find some way to handle their lives. Corinne and I were in and out of courts for a number of years with her four. We lost them for a while, we had them for a while, we lost them for a while, and we ended up with her oldest daughter staying with us for the whole time. I went about 12 years without seeing my two kids from about 62 until 74, and we've gotten back together through the help of the fellowship. And as a matter of fact, except for Corinne's oldest son, we are on just beautiful terms with all five of the kids right now. And sometimes we talk more about the kids and sometimes less. So you probably won't hear again about them tonight, but they're doing real well, and we love them all, and we have real good communication with all but the oldest boy. And there's some reason to believe that he might be having trouble with the booze himself. And if so, we hope he might find the fellowship eventually. But I came up on alcohol when I married Corinne, and I need to talk to you about alcohol. Now, I related an awful lot to Jack last night, but I sure didn't relate to him in booze. Booze just has never been for me. I don't know why, but it just never has been. I do know why. It scared me to death. My first remembrance, the first time I ever drank alcohol, and by the way, I'll go back. You'll find I jump around a lot in my talk, and that's all right. I come from very good Christian family. You know, a lot of us do that, and it's acceptable in this fellowship to do that. But they were about as dry as any could be. They were Methodists. I go back, I have a long Methodist heritage, but they were dry, and they never had alcohol in the home that I know of until Corinne brought it in sometime after we'd been married. So I didn't know anything about booze. And when I was a senior in high school, our family doctor, who had high hopes that I would go into medical school and come back and join him in his practice, and I don't know why he felt that way, but he did, invited me up to Lake Erie. And I went up, and he was very proud of his homemade wine. So he gave me a glass of his wine, and it was grape wine, and I drank it, and he asked me how I liked it. And I'll never forget my answer, because it really tells you how I thought about alcohol. I told him it was all right, but I really preferred grape juice. And that really is the way I and alcohol have reacted the whole time. When I was going through the first marriage, we did a certain amount of socializing with people at various times, and I learned to drink. I didn't particularly care for it, but I did learn to drink to be with the crowd some. My favorite was the screwdriver, and that was simple. I couldn't taste the vodka. I liked orange juice, so I liked a screwdriver, because I enjoyed the orange juice. But I really didn't care to drink. And I think the truth of it is that alcohol scared me, because I had built such a snug wall around myself so that you wouldn't be able to get inside. I had a very nice shell. It protected me against all outside occurrences. And when I drank a little bit, that shell started to kind of fall away a little bit, and it just scared me to death. There was nothing that anyone could do to make me take something that would lose that shell. So when I got to feeling just a little comfortable and a little bit talkative, I wouldn't drink anymore. There's just no way I'd drink anymore, and that shell stayed in place. So I was afraid of booze. When I got married to Corinne, she just really did love to drink, and she really wanted me to be a drinking companion to her. And her favorite drink was beer. Now, when I looked at beer, you know exactly what I thought. And that's exactly what I thought when I saw beer. And I was never able to even taste beer. It's never really passed my lips. And that was really a disappointment to my wife. She really wanted, she tells stories of how she used to spike my cokes and things like this with anything she could come up with, and I never knew this. But I just was not a drinking companion. So that's really pretty much where alcohol took me. Now, once we got married, Quinn shares in her story that she feels she was alcoholic about the time we got married, that she had crossed whatever line there might be, and that she drank alcoholic. She also shares that she found the pills about the same time, and she went through all of them. She used to be able to name them all. I don't remember them all. So we had the dual problem of pills and booze. And at the time when it was worse, before we found the fellowships, and I didn't understand what was going on. You know, she had lost her kids, or even if she had them, she was still fighting for them. And I always made excuses for her. I think, let me just make one little comment on this. I usually make it earlier, I think. You know, I told you I fell head over heels in love, and I really did. This, for the first time, I found someone that I could truly communicate with. And I have never fallen out of love with Corinne, even through the worst of anything that we went through in alcoholism. Now, there's nothing special about that, it's just the way it was. And I needed her love. I needed it very desperately, because I had never felt love, even though it was there. There was a lot of love in my family, but I didn't know how to accept love. And so, in essence, I didn't have it, because I couldn't accept it. So this is the first time that I had found anyone that I could share a love with and could feel the love and could communicate with. And so even in our first years, before we found the fellowship, we had a lot of tremendous conversations, a tremendous amount of give and take and discussion about a whole lot of topics. This was from my viewpoint. But Corinne would often tell me that it disturbed her that we'd never talked about things and that we were not able to communicate. And it seemed like it was going through the same thing that she had found in her first marriage and I had found in my first marriage. Once we got into the fellowship, we understood that the times when I really felt we were having tremendous communication, she was in a blackout. And so we talked beautifully, but she never remembered. So we had this early on, and I think probably she was in blackouts probably from the very beginning of our married life. And it was just the way we lived. I didn't know anything different. I thought this was just Corinne. But I didn't know about blackouts. Now, bless her heart, she could be as knowledgeable and articulate when she was bombed as most people I knew when they didn't have a thing to drink. And you wouldn't know that she was bombed and wasn't really carrying on an intelligent, or it was an intelligent conversation. She just didn't remember it, is all. So we had these problems. We had all the common problems that all of you have had. We had the fears and the resentments. Every time the phone rang at work, I wondered, what now? What's going on at home? So we had all these kinds of things. When we finally found the fellowship, it was Corinne that found the fellowship. We moved from Michigan, where we had met and gotten married. We moved to Texas, and I spent 4 years in Texas, and then I got a job offer in Cincinnati, Ohio. When we moved to Cincinnati, Corinne spent about 6 weeks with the kids up at my folks in Columbus. And while she was there, she made her first call to AA. And I sat in with that meeting. She invited me to sit in. We had two beautiful gals from AA in Columbus come out and talk to her for a couple hours. And shared with her their experience, their strength, and their hope. And I remembered, as I looked back on it, that I thought it was beautiful, their sharing. But when they left that night, we were due to go down to Cincinnati. The home was ready for us. We went down to Cincinnati, and you know, I never even had their meeting enter my mind for another 2.5 years until Corinne finally called and went to AA. And I'm not even sure, but she didn't have to remind me of this. But we went through an awful lot in that next year and a half or 2.5 years. And one of the things that I remember is how often I tried to help and tried to do those things for her which she really should be doing for herself. And the thing that I remember the most, and Corinne and I disagree on this, and when we share stories, it's all right, but my remembrance of it, sometime in December of 1965, I had really had it up to here. Now, having up to here for me with Corinne was just frustration. I was just absolutely, completely frustrated. I had done everything I could. And one of the things that she would do when she was feeling bad and really wanted help, she would ask me to help her. And she would cry and ask me to help her. And I did everything I could. And finally, out of complete frustration, I was able to tell her that I had done everything I possibly could, that she would have to find her own help. Now, that's my remembrance. And within a month, she had called AA and was going to AA. That was my first release, and it was a release out of just complete frustration. I didn't know anything about the fellowship. There was nothing else I could do. I just really had it. So she went to AA. And when she went to AA, I thought it was beautiful. She had found a group of people that I somehow sensed could help her. The first week she went to AA, she brought home the big book. And one of the things I remember is spending two evenings, well into the night, reading the big book. And I thought that was the most beautiful book that I had ever read in my life. And of course, my gut feeling at that time was, if she will read this and do what this book says, she can really find a lot of help for herself. And of course, I was reading it all for her, which is all right at the time, you know. But it was a beautiful book. And it convinced me that this was a source of her help. You name the professional, and we had tried the professional. I don't think there was any that we hadn't tried. Not a one of them helped. And of course, Quinn is able to share now that they can't help if they don't know the truth. And they never knew the truth. But nothing helped. And we really had tried everything. So I was real pleased with AA. And one of the things that I've always been thankful for is I have never felt any resentment toward AA. Now, that's not true of a lot of us in this group. I was right there to help. You know, she didn't want to die. So I was there to help. Before this period was over, I had come far enough in my own personal growth that I knew that I loved this gal enough to release her fully and completely. And I was able not to respond one time when she called and had taken an overdose. And she called frantically other people and she got some help. I was able to tell her that I loved her enough that if for her own sobriety she needed to leave me, that was okay, that I'd understand, and that she could go. And she knew finally that I had completely released her. I found that I could sit at the kitchen table while she drank and could love her and not take her inventory, not judge her, just hope that sometime she would find help and still love her. I could walk over when she was in a drunken stupor on the floor, knowing that she had to find a way to pick herself up, because if I helped her anymore, it might really kill her. I had to be able to accept the fact that she might die and know this was okay and not feel guilty. Doesn't mean I wouldn't have had guilt pangs if it would have happened. But I knew I could take it. I knew I could handle it. I had to go that far with this gal that I love so much. That's the hardest thing that I ever did in my life, was to release her that far. And I found in this release of Corinne that I was able to do it with everyone else that I loved. Because I know in my heart I have loved and I do love her more than anyone else in my life. And when I found I could do it with her, I could do it with everyone else. And this became just part of my life. A month after I made that final release, she came back into AA. On her hands and knees, as she would say, because everyone else had released her also. And she did real well. She had one other slip in AA, and she's doing beautiful now. She's doing real great. So I had to learn to release with love. During this same period, something else happened, because this is my searching time. And I heard someone in AA use the term self-will run riot. You know, the big book talks about this. But I was ready to hear that. Self-will run riot. It sparked another bell in my head, and I knew, without a doubt, that was one of my biggest problems. My self-will. I wanted things to go my way. You know, I never really had believed that about myself. You know, this nice guy,
I didn't really want people to do things that I wanted them to do, and that was a lie. I did. I was a stubborn guy. I manipulated. I didn't really understand this, but I wanted people to believe the way I did, to do things that I wanted them to do. And I was ready to hear. And those, just those few words, completely sparked and completely changed my life. Because they permitted me to go back and pick up on step three, and permitted me to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, as I understand Him. And for me, step three is a complete release of all of you beautiful people to be your own selves, and to let me love you where you are, however you believe. And that was, without a doubt, the biggest release in my life that I've ever had. And it has permitted me to share with people just how I feel without any expectations that you agree or disagree. I can listen to how you feel, and that's perfectly all right. I think it's wonderful that you feel the way you do. You don't have to agree with me anymore. It has been a release in freedom for me, not having to have anyone else believe the way I do. It has permitted me to share things with other people that I never could have before, because if you wouldn't agree with me, then I would have felt shut off. And so I wouldn't have been able to share. But now I could share because you didn't have to agree. This was a tremendous experience for me. I know it was one of my spiritual experiences. And again, it's all part of the time when I found God in my life. So these two little things happened to me in that particular period of time. One of the things that I've always had trouble with is communication. Now, Corinne and I have worked on communication quite hard. Even since 71, we've had a lot of trouble with that. It's only in the last 4 or 5 years that our communication has really gotten real good. And we both have worked. She's worked from her stance, and I've worked from mine. Because Corinne, those of you who know her, you know, when she thinks something, she says it. And she doesn't necessarily say it softly either. She's an outspoken young lady, and I know you've never met anyone like that. And she lets you know exactly how, and she sometimes has a few words to go along with it too, you know, a few colorful things that come out. And she learned that this intimidated me. And so she has learned through her program to be less intimidating, and I have learned through my program not to be intimidated. And so working together, we have finally come to where we can really have some beautiful communication and not really expect each other to agree with the other. We can love without having to agree. And this is a really great place to be. Now, it doesn't mean that we do it 100% of the time. Okay? We're very human. But it means that when we don't do it, we know it, we understand, and we can make amends. So we make use of the program. And this, that I have found, is very important for me. I'd like to do two other things for you tonight. You know, I told you I turned it over to God. I never really know what I'm going to say when I get up here. I thought a lot. I do a lot of praying about it. I meditate a lot. I go through a whole lot of things that have happened in my life. And then I just get up and it just kind of comes out. But the two things that I would like to share with you, I'd like to just kind of share a little bit on the steps, because they have been very, very meaningful in my life in Al-Anon. In fact, it is the steps to me that this is Al-Anon. When I first came into the program, I did a lot with the Serenity Prayer. Now, I didn't believe in God, and I'll get to Gus, the other thing I want to share with you. You know, I can't really separate the two. When I came into the program, I couldn't even use the term God. I was a practicing agnostic. And the only reason I wasn't an atheist is because I didn't have guts enough to be an atheist. You know, I've always been one of these people that wanted to hedge. And so, you know, maybe somewhere, maybe there is a little bit to this, so hedging won't. And so I hedged. But I was a very good practicing agnostic. In spite of the fact that I was a Sunday school superintendent for a while, and I taught Sunday school class, and we went to church regularly, I know in my heart that I was an agnostic. I didn't believe in God. God to me was a great big guy up there with a long white beard, and he made absolutely no sense in my life. I didn't know how anyone could take him seriously. So I came into the fellowship with no belief really in God. And you were beautiful. You didn't make me believe in God. You didn't try to convince me that there was a God. You let me go at my own speed. You taught me that it didn't matter how fast or how slow I went, that you'd love me anyway. And that if I wanted to feel bad for years and years, that's all right. You didn't mind. You could still love me. Now, I've been able to say that to other people coming in, and it's real great. We can stay as sick as we want to, as long as we want to, in this fellowship, and we're still loved. You know, we're the ones that feel bad. So I let God go. So in the steps, every God step, I had to ignore. I just couldn't do anything with anything that I thought pertained to God at all. I hear many people in this fellowship tell newcomers that you have to take the steps in order. And if you believe that, and that's all right. I don't mind if you take them in order. But if people would have told me that I had to take them in order, or I couldn't make any progress in this program, I probably would have turned around and left. I had to do what I could from where I was. So I took them piecemeal all over the place. Now, I didn't take them well, don't get me wrong, but I took what I could. And that's all I could do. And you loved me anyway. One of the ones I had no trouble at all with was the first part of step one. Not the whole step, mind you. The first part of step one. I had it accepted before I even got in this fellowship that I was completely powerless over Corinne's alcoholism. I didn't even know it was alcoholism, but I was completely powerless over this stuff that she was doing. There wasn't anything that I liked better in my first month of meetings than to hear alcoholism explained as a disease. I wanted to hear that. I wanted something to explain my wife's great behavior. And a disease was wonderful. You know, disease is very acceptable, you know. So this was great. So I grabbed the first part of step one right away. Now, the second part, you know, my life was unmanageable. I couldn't have an unmanageable life, not Walt. And it took a while for me to really firmly accept the fact that, yeah, my life was unmanageable in most respects. And I had to work on that. That came later, but that was all right. The second step that I really grabbed a hold of real well, and again, it wasn't the whole step, it was the middle part of step 12. That's the part of carrying the message. Now, I wasn't even a full two-stepper. You know, I hear a lot of AAs talking about two-steppers. I wasn't even a full two-stepper. I was a half of step one and a third of step 12. But that was all right, because at the time, that's where I was. And that's all I could do. Now, I didn't have much to carry. But when people asked me to share at a meeting, that's all I could share. Now, I piecemealed some of the others in. As a matter of fact, it was only several years ago that I really honestly realized that I had taken my first fourth step when I gave my first lead. I didn't want to do that. I was in the program 9 months. One of the things that took hold somewhere in that first 9 months were people telling me that if you want to get something out of the program, you are going to have to put something into it. And when you are asked to do something, you better say yes. And somehow I believed this. And I have never said no unless I was sick or out of town or some compelling reason. I've always been thankful for that. But this lady came up to me. We were still in Cincinnati. We found a fellowship in Cincinnati before we went to Raleigh. She lived over in Kentucky, and she came up and asked me if I would give a lead. And of course I said, I'm not ready to give a lead. And she said, I didn't ask you if you were ready to give a lead. I want you to give a lead. And I said, but. She said, no buts. I said, okay, I'll give a lead. I didn't want to give a lead. I wasn't ready to give a lead. I wouldn't have been ready until I could have given you a beautiful lead that you really would have thought that I was a pretty good guy, you know. So I went home and I thought about it. And I wrote out, I don't know, 4 or 5 or 6 pages in longhand. And I did everything that I was supposed to do, as well as I could at the time. I gave you a good biographical history. And I got me into Al-Anon, and I told you where I was in Al-Anon. It wasn't very far, but I told you where I was, and that's what we're supposed to do when we leave. And I got down there to that church. It was in the middle of winter, at least in the fall. If it was 9 months, it couldn't have been the middle of winter. But it was at least cold. And of course, I had to dress up for this, so I had a coat and tie on. I had to look nice. But I was scared to death. I sat down. There was a table in the church basement. There were about 15 or 18 gals around it. No men, still. And I sat down at the end of that table. I could no more have stood up than I could have flown. I couldn't even have stood up behind a podium and hung onto the podium. I sat down and I hung on to the table. And I read that verbatim from one end to the other. And I was sweating profusely every word I spoke. It really tore me up. And when I finished that talk, two things. One was a tremendous feeling of peace and serenity. Two, my coat was soaked through, absolutely soaked. But that was my first major step in really cracking that wall that I had built up around myself. And I have found since, I didn't really recognize it at that time, but I have found since that one of my major defects of character was the inability to share me with you. That was a defect of character. I had to search for that because that's not anything I heard talked about in meetings. I had to work on that one. Now, a lot of the things that people share in meetings in terms of their defects of character, although they hit me, they didn't hit me hard, they didn't hit me deep. I had fears and I had resentments, I had all these things, but really no more than most normal outside people have. They didn't really grab me. Fear did to some extent, but not as badly as these things. But this inability to share was a tremendous defect of character on my part. And to me, a defect of character is nothing more than something that hurts me. That is a defect of character. And this was hurting me because it was separating me from you, whom I wanted to love and wanted to know, and I truly wanted you to know me, but I didn't know how to go about it. So this was my first step in getting rid of that shell. I have found every time I have given a lead since. Now, in the first years, I didn't give one without going back over that initial one. I never tore it up and threw it away. I kept it, I went back over it, and I thought about it, and I tried to bring it up to where I was and to add to it. And, of course, I took my fifth step at the same time. My fifth step I took with that little group. So my fourth and fifth steps have routinely been taken when I have given leads. And I try to bring myself up to date with my feelings and share with you how I feel at the time that I do give a lead, or give a talk, as they call them now in North Carolina. It took me a long time to accept the fact that a lead wasn't a lead in North Carolina. It meant something special to me when I grew up in Cincinnati. So it's kind of nice to hear the term used again after a number of years. You know, I started to talk about the 12 steps. I guess God doesn't really want me to talk about those, because I do want to talk a little bit about God. I've already told you how I came into the fellowship with God. Someone back in those early days told me not to worry about it. It said, you let God alone, and if you're serious about this fellowship, if you stay here, and if you keep working, something will happen in your life, and at least you will become comfortable with some power greater than yourself. Because I didn't even take step two early on. Now, that was kind of a verboten step. Because I didn't think there was anyone more powerful than I. Really, that's true. I felt I was in control. And it didn't take too long to realize I wasn't. And that was part of the end of step one, too. I had to accept the end of step one before I could come and accept step two. And my first power really were individual people within Al-Anon and AA. My male companionship in this fellowship was AA for the first full year of my life in the fellowship. I will always be grateful to AA. You pulled me through many, many times. in many, many scrapes, and I called many of you sponsors before I really had an Al-Anon sponsor. You helped me as much as Al-Anon did, especially in my early years in this fellowship. And many of the things that I share with you tonight are things I heard from AA as well as Al-Anon. I don't even know where it came from anymore. It's just all part of what came together and had meaning for me in my life. But someone back in there told me it didn't matter, so I didn't worry about God. But I did come to believe in a power greater than myself. And that power was individuals. And then it grew into the group. It grew into the fellowships, both AA and Al-Anon. These were my powers that I really latched on to, and I really kept a tight hold on. And it grew into where really my higher power was love. The love that I felt within the fellowships really became my higher power. But God was still out here somewhere. I used to be able to say after a while that God is love, and so love is God, and that's okay. And this did me well for a while. But during this period of 71, this 9-month period when I really searched and I really hurt, and I was really trying to find Walt, somewhere during that time, I started to have conscious contact with God, with some power. I sensed His presence in my life. I knew He was there working. And I had a lot of real good talks with a lot of people in His fellowship. I slowly became comfortable with God, with the concept of God. And I sensed that He was with me, and that He was in me, and that He really was me, as He was you and is you. And I have since that time had a continuous sense of His presence in my life. For a long time, I felt that I no longer was using the slogans, because God had come into my life and I used Him directly. And I finally realized that the slogans had become so much a part of my life that I just used them naturally. They were here. You know, a lot of my early life in the fellowship was up here. And it wasn't until I really got down to the gut level that God came in and took a hold of my hand. But He is with me, and He is there continuously. And any time I need help, I know I can chat with Him, and I can share with Him. And I never really believed this would ever happen to me. But I find that He is here not only within the fellowship, but He truly works in my life in all aspects of it. The 12th step. Having had a spiritual awakening, I've had that. I've sensed God's presence. I've had not only awakening, I've had experiences with God. And I do carry the message when I can, and I know that this program works in all aspects of my life. My work was in real bad shape for a while in the early 70s, that 71 period, a little earlier than that. I have beautiful relationships at work. This program works anywhere I want it to work. It doesn't mean I don't slip some, but it's beautiful because I know where to go. Anytime I have problems these days, the first place I look is inside. That's one of the biggest things this program has given to me. I no longer have to look to you for my problems. You know, I used to always have to find someone else to blame it on. But when I became honest, there is never a problem that I have had that I can honestly say starts here. And so when I could no longer blame anyone else, and I had to take the full responsibility for my problems, this is another place that helped me grow. I had to accept the responsibilities for Walt. Now, I could blame you if I wanted to, but if I did, I hurt. And until I really found a source of hurt inside me, it never left. And this is something that the fellowship has given me. An understanding that I am the source of all my problems and not you. It's also taught me that I really, truly am alone, and yet I'm not alone. Happiness is within. I can't expect you to give me happiness except as I accept the beautiful things that you do. And that is happiness from within. God is within. He's also without, as I see him through you. These things are things that I have found through working the steps and through sharing with you in this fellowship. I truly found love in this fellowship. I found that I had to love myself before I could love you, which meant I had to understand myself before I could love myself and therefore be open to loving you. And I found this was very important in my life. And I have found and sensed within this fellowship love that I didn't really feel existed anywhere. I really found my life in this fellowship. And you all are a beautiful part of it. I do enjoy sharing with you. I kind of hate to quit. But you are beautiful, and I would just like to tell you that I do love each and every one of you very much. And thank you very much.